www.thepetshow.com. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Healthy You, Reclaim Your Spark. Aging changes your body's cells in ways that can sap your energy. Here's how to amp it up. Perky, passionate, powerful. How much do those words describe you? In a 2025 meta-analysis, 3 out of 5 adults over 60 described themselves as being easily fatigued after doing normal activities. This slowdown isn't healthy. Age-related fatigue is associated with increased mortality risk due to the likelihood of physical decline and the development of conditions that impair your ability to do daily tasks. It doesn't have to be this way. Researchers who study energy metabolism say there are 4 very doable things that can help turn back the clock on your cells to restore your energy level and maintain it well into your later years. Why our batteries run low? Mitochondria are structures that act as the energy processors of our cells. Using the food we eat, they create a molecule called adenosine triphosphate, ATP, the chemical energy currency all of our cells run on. Mitochondria are not the only providers of energy, but they do the heavy lifting, especially when it comes to the activities of daily life, explains Ian Lanzen, a professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Sciences in Rochester, Minnesota. As we age, our cells become less efficient, putting increased demand on the mitochondria. Cells burn more energy than they should to do the same amount of work. This is like a car engine that's rusting. It needs to expend more energy to do the same distance, says Martin Picard, a mitochondrial physiobiologist at Columbia University. As your brain senses that your cells are on overdrive, it looks to conserve energy everywhere. It slows down the process of rebuilding muscle, causing you to lose muscle mass. It reduces melanin production, leading to gray hair. And you naturally become less physically active, which atrophies muscles and encourages the body to make fewer mitochondria to save even more energy. This loss of natural energy, called the brain-body conservation model of aging, winds up backfiring by creating physical fatigue that diminishes the long-term health and vitality of your body. This begins a spiraling down into frailty, Picard said. But this spiral isn't inevitable. Lifestyle changes can increase the number of mitochondria and help keep your cells and you feeling more energetic. Don't stop moving. Like muscles, mitochondria work on a use-it-or-lose-it basis, says Lanza. There are big differences in energy metabolism between people who have a sedentary lifestyle versus those who maintain physical activity, he says. When older adults are able to maintain healthy, guideline-recommended levels of physical activity, there are fewer age-related deficits in mitochondrial function. Your move. Aim for the recommended 150 minutes of moderate intensity activity plus 2 days of muscle strengthening activities per week. How do you know if you're working hard enough? If you do something and find you're breathing harder, going upstairs, walking somewhere, having sex, you're stimulating your mitochondria, says Picard. Suss out sleep struggles. With age, sleep isn't as deep, long, or consolidated, says Eric Prather, a professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at the University of California, San Francisco, and author of The Sleep Prescription. Sleep lives in the brain, Like everything else, our brain ages, he says, which may be why we see sleep change in the fifth decade of life and beyond. These changes can make sleep feel less restorative, and there's evidence that sleep loss may also accelerate cellular aging. Your move? If you feel run down during the day, despite being in bed for 7+ hours a night, you need to rule out any relevant medical conditions or disorders, like obstructive sleep apnea, Prather says. Medications can also interfere with sleep or cause daytime drowsiness. So ask your doctor if you should take your pills at different times of day or before bed. Avoiding dozing or catnapping by structuring your day with planned activities. This allows sleep to be pushed into the night where it can get to work on cellular repair and regeneration. Narrow your eating window. Too much food is an energetic burden to the body, says Picard, since it has to expend energy to handle additional calories. Eating more doesn't give you more energy. It actually steals your energy, he said. Intermittent fasting, IF, which essentially means putting guardrails around the time you eat, has two main benefits. One, restricting eating to an 8-hour window tends to reduce your daily intake of calories. Two, IF improves autophagy, the process by which cells clear out trash, like free radicals. Intermittent fasting activates that to bring cellular balance back to health by getting rid of damaged mitochondria, explains Rajat Singh, MD, a professor of medicine and director of the Comprehensive Liver Research Center at UCLA. Your move? Research suggests there are benefits to a 16-8 IF schedule, where you fast for 16 hours and eat within an 8-hour window. However, long-term IF isn't sustainable for everyone, especially older adults. For best results, find a fasting period that works for you and that you can stick with, says Singh. And of course, get clearance from your doctor first. Maybe that's 12 hours of fasting from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., for example, coupled with regular exercise. The key is consistency. Talk to more people. You know how being stressed and overwhelmed can lead to feeling fatigued? That's evidence that your state of mind is affecting your mitochondria, says Picard. People who feel more positive about life have more mitochondria with greater capacity for energy transformation than people who have no purpose and fewer positive life experiences, he says. Positive states of mind may increase biological energy through the mitochondria, helping you feel more alive. Your move? Just 8 hours of solitude can be enough to drag down your energy. Call a friend, send your kids a text, get together to play cards. These are all things that keep brain and muscle networks active to diminish the hallmarks of aging, says Christian Lewinberg, a professor at the University of Florida's Institute on Aging. Focus on new activities and breaking routines. Ask a friend or neighbor what they're doing tomorrow, and don't hesitate to ask if you can join them. This article was by Jessica Migala, who writes about health and lifestyle for Cosmopolitan, Everyday Health, and other publications. And we have a sidebar article here, 5 Fast Fatigue Fixes. Revamping cellular health takes time. These quick hacks don't. 1. Drink a glass of water. Even mild dehydration causes fatigue and tanks alertness, and older adults are more susceptible to the condition. Step outside for a break. Connecting with nature can be restorative and a good antidote to mental burnout and workday stress. Walk for a few. For every 30 minutes of sitting, take a light 3-minute walk. This pattern is known to help fight fatigue. Try cold water. Turn on the shower for a cool blast. people report feeling more attentive, alert, active, and inspiring after a bracing immersion. And finally, give a sniff. Inhaling a scent like peppermint or citrus has been known to boost alertness, likely because odors have a strong effect on one's emotions. Now, another article about money matters, money saver. Question, my wife and I enjoy going out to dinner with another couple, but there's an issue. We don't drink, but our friends do. They often order several cocktails or a bottle of wine for themselves, which adds a lot to the bill. We don't think we should be responsible for splitting the check 50-50. Are we being total cheapskates? Total cheapskates, you are not. Whenever someone orders more food or alcohol, etiquette dictates that they acknowledge it and offer to get separate checks. It's also traditional for the person who extends the dinner invitation to foot the bill, but that's often not how we organize dining out with friends. We typically make plans more casually, and we don't discuss how the bill will be handled. Also, people often don't notice that they ordered more food or drinks than their companions. I recommend addressing the topic before your next outing. That way, if everybody goes into the meal knowing what to expect, it works out best. Be concise. I know in the past we've split the bill, but since Allison and I aren't drinking, we would love to grab separate checks. If you forget to broach the subject in advance, use the same line at the end of the meal. A fair split is a perfectly reasonable request, so don't feel embarrassed or awkward asking for separate checks. And if your friends balk, maybe it's best to enjoy your meals with them at home. Next question. People often send me presents that I don't like, and I'm looking for ways to save money. Is it okay to give a gift I received to someone else, or is re-gifting bad manners? When done well, re-gifting can be a kind gesture that reduces waste. But when done poorly, it can result in hurt and resentment for both the recipient and the person who gave you the gift. I've heard of some doozies, including people who re-gifted a present to the person who gave them the gift. Oops! Not a fun moment for anyone involved. Gift-giving should be a thoughtful, joyous experience. A re-gifted item can check the box, but it's all in how you approach it. If you've received a gift that you already have, it's okay to give the new one to someone else as a present. It's also fine to re-gift something you received years ago, such as a watch, a piece of artwork, or a special keepsake that you cherished but are ready to pass on to a loved one. Avoid the convenience re-gift, where you re-gift something simply because you don't like it and want to get rid of it. That makes it all about you and not about them. The antithesis of what gift-giving should be. You're also cheating yourself out of the wonderful feeling of giving a gift you know the recipient will enjoy. As for whether to acknowledge that the gift is a re-gift, one approach is to be straightforward with the recipient. Alex, I received this as a gift, but I already have one, and I really thought you would enjoy it. This shows the recipient that you're not just giving them a random item, but rather something you think would be great for them based on their interests or needs. However, if you'd rather not reveal that the present is a gift, here are some ground rules. The item must have all its parts and manuals and be in its original packaging. The gift should not be handmade, like the sweater your friend knit for you last Christmas, unique, monogrammed, or personalized, even if the engraved initials or a date match. You need to be 99% sure that the person who gave you the gift and the person who will receive it would not be upset if they found out you re-gifted it. I save this one for last because it's the most important and the most forgotten rule. You have to genuinely believe that the person receiving the gift will appreciate the item. Bottom line, re-gifting can be beautiful when handled with care. Now, let's look at something from Jean Chatsky to the rescue. When mom is the landlord, she stopped collecting rent from her daughter. Should she start up again? The problem. Karen Heidel, widowed in 2014, remarried 5 years ago, and moved from her house in Northern Maryland to her new husband's nearby home. Rather than sell her own house, she rented it to her daughter, Brittany, a recently divorced mother of three. "I wanted to make a safe haven for them," says Heidel, 75. Under a simple agreement, Brittany paid her mom $600 a month and covered the mortgage-free home's $2,200 annual tax bill, until Brittany hit a rough patch and the rent checks stopped. Now, Brittany has bounced back, and Heidel wonders if she should ask for rent again. Would that make her a bad mom, or should she give Brittany the home outright? Heidel's adult son seems okay with that, but not treating her kids equally makes her squeamish. The advice. For help, I turned to estate planning attorneys Craig Parker of the online service Trust and Will, and Anne Margaret Carrizzo, who practices in New York. Both thought Heidel should back burner her material impulses and focus first on her own financial security. Here's how they viewed her situation. The problem. Heidel may need to pay for long-term care. For now, her finances are fine. Social Security and her pension from teaching more than cover her living expenses and her share of the mortgage on a beach home she bought with Ray, her current husband. She has what she calls a comfortable amount of retirement savings, and the house where Brittany lives is worth about $350,000. But with no long-term care policy in place, her income and savings may not be enough to cover her care. Recommendations. Keep the house. If Heidel were to need care, the equity in the home would help pay for it, Parker says. And if her daughter got the house now, Brittany would lose a tax break on any sale. Capital gains taxes would be based on what Heidel paid for the home and any improvements. If Brittany inherited it instead, taxes on a sale would be calculated based on the home's value when Heidel died, likely meaning a smaller tax bill for Brittany upon selling. Problem. By allowing Brittany to live in her home without a lease, Heidel is vulnerable in the worst-case scenario of a conflict between them. Parker says, you can't just move in, you can't change the locks. And if Heidel ever wants to take out a loan against the property, she'll need to show the lease is collateral. Recommendation. Get a lease in place that details Brittany's rights as a tenant and her responsibilities, such as the property tax payments, which Brittany has continued to make, and start collecting rent. Problem. Heidel worries that giving Brittany the house would be unfair to her adult son, Rick, even though Rick recently tried to ease her concerns, saying he and his wife didn't need it. Still, Heidel says she's torn, because jobs can come and go, and Rick's situation could change. Recommendation. Leave everything to be split between Brittany and Rick, giving Brittany the right to buy him out of the house. If Rick wants to give Brittany his share after Heidel dies, he can simply sign it over. Parker says it's an easy transaction. The outcome. Heidel agreed about not giving Brittany the house now, but she pushed back on other advice. After Rick told her that if she died any time soon, he would immediately give his half of the house to his sister, Heidel told me she would leave Brittany the house and Rick a greater share of her money. And because Brittany's federal government job is now uncertain, Heidel says she's holding off on asking for rent. I get it. Sometimes love and worry preempt taxes and legal issues, as they should. Want Jean Chatsky to write about helping you sort out your financial problem? Email rescue@aarp.org. Now, a couple of brief bits of advice here. Work. Sharpen your LinkedIn profile. We ask experts how to shine on LinkedIn when you're job hunting. Make a splash. Focus on three items. Your timeline photo, which should hint at your line of work. Your headshot, which should be a recent shoulders-up pic, and your headline, which should be zingy, visit the linked talent blog for examples. Summarize smartly. Write your linked summary in the first person, not third person, to sound more engaging. Use keywords that match the opportunities you're seeking. Remove unnecessary items. Prune your education and experience sections periodically to keep the focus on your current expertise and goals. Highlight your talents. Weave relevant skills throughout your profile by including them in your summary and job descriptions, as well as in the skills sections of your profile. Focus on impact. Throughout your profile, emphasize the effect your work has had, spotlighting the numbers and any measurable results. And give props. Share and request recommendations from colleagues to keep your profile fresh. And now, under the heading of fitness, get more muscle power now. A not-so-fun fact. Muscle power, as we learned earlier, the ability to produce force quickly, tends to decline faster than muscle strength in your 50s. And this explosive power is key to preserving your mobility and bone strength for the long haul, physiologists say. Consider these power fitness tips from Sherry Andrews, physician, personal trainer, and author of Find Your Pulse. And share any questions with your health care provider. Get low. For a lower body boost, try to sit-to-stand drills. Andrews suggests move from a seated chair position to a standing, back to seated, and without using your hands to propel you, or you can try body weight squats. Move your upper body. Try torso moves like a standing side toss. Stand perpendicular to a wall with an inflatable ball at the hip that's further from the wall. Then twist as you throw the ball against a wall. Keep rests brief. When you're focused on functional power training, resting just 30 to 60 seconds between sets will keep your heart rate up and mimic real-world demands. Focus on form. To avoid injuring yourself, master any movements before adding more weight or speed. And finally, squeeze in your sessions. You don't need a lot of time, said Andrews, noting you can focus on building power 2 or 3 times a week. Now, how about, will I ever be able to retire? Many Gen X women worry they'll never save enough. Tracy Soriano, 54, used to avoid looking at her retirement account balances. The owner of a massage therapy practice in Bellingham, Washington, Soriano says she was afraid of what she might learn. I really struggled, she recalls. My fear of not having enough made me not want to see what I had. Soriano, a single mother who also teaches massage at a community college, finally confronted the situation after a snafu with her Social Security account inspired her to track down her balances and monitor them. It's a common anxiety for Gen X women. Only 27% of women aged 50 to 64 are confident they'll have enough money to live comfortably in retirement, according to a 2022 AARP study. They're part of the first generation to come of age after the shift from pensions to 401ks, only 14% of Gen Xers have access to a defined benefit pension, and many women have seen their retirement savings lag behind those of their male peers. On average, Gen X men have 53% more in their 401ks than Gen X women do, according to a 2023 report by Bank of America. Women get behind for many reasons, said Louis Borages, CEO of International Private Wealth Advisors in Irvine, California. Challenges include career interruptions to care for children and elders, the gender pay gap, divorce, and solo parenting. Career interruptions also mean they weren't participating in Social Security, so sometimes they're behind on that as well. Arriving in your 50s with fears your retirement isn't secure can feel overwhelming, but financial experts say it's not too late. you still have time to save, says Marie Taylor, a financial advisor with Edward Jones in West Hempstead, New York. In fact, creating a savings plan reduces stress. Here's what financial pros recommend. Bite the bullet. First, face your fears and look at what you have. Sometimes people assume they haven't saved enough, but find they just need a realistic retirement plan, says Autumn Knudsen, founder and lead financial planner at Styled Wealth in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Context is important for planning, she adds, like knowing when and where you might retire and when you'll claim Social Security. Get educated. Guidance could come from a financial planner, podcast, friend, book, or community resource. Barajas recommends the No Frills Personal Finance for Dummies as a building block. The key? Just start. Take baby steps. Budget to find chunks of discretionary income, even small amounts, to devote to paying down high-interest debt, and prioritize contributing to a tax-advantaged account like an IRA or a 401k. For example, if there's no flexibility in your income, could you take in a roommate to help share costs? Ask for more. Consider asking for a raise at work. Not eligible for a raise? Find out what it requires so you're prepared when an opportunity arises. After Soriana decided to get a clearer view of her financial picture, her anxiety eased. She knew she had left $8,000 in a 401k from a government job she had held, and she discovered it had grown over time to $35,000. She also learned that the job had come with a pension that will add about $400 per month to her income once she retires. It didn't add up to enough to ensure a comfortable retirement, but it was enough to spur Soriano to remake her budget and begin contributing more to her community college retirement account. Having clear information gives me feelings of safety and empowerment, she says. Even though the path to retirement may be trickier for Gen X women than it was for their mothers, there's plenty of hope, Knudsen says. People have a lot more agency than they realize. And this article was by Joanna Nesbitt. And for one money-saving tip, get it free, hit your warehouse club midday. Warehouse stores like Sam's Club and Costco typically run product demonstrations, a.k.a. free samples, often between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I do hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.